No wonder they're called the gang that couldn't shoot straight. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be back with you, Barry. You know, my wife and I just went out and had a little dinner, and we went to Chick-fil-A.
Yay!
In order to our support for Chick-fil-A. This is the second time in a week. We don't usually go that often, but we're showing our support for Chick-fil-A, standing up for traditional marriage. And if you've got a Chick-fil-A anywhere within a 100-mile radius, we suggest you get in the car and drive there right after the show's over and get something.
And have supper there tonight. It's actually very, very good food, ladies and gentlemen. And the better part about it is, for those who haven't heard what's going on, Chick-fil-A has come under fire from homosexual activist groups because their CEO, Dan Cathy, has stated clearly, unapologetically and publicly, that they are going to stand on the principles that they founded the company with, which were to operate by biblical principles. Those of you who are familiar with Chick-fil-A know that they actually do not open on Sundays in any of their restaurants anywhere, and that they have a very strong biblical principle foundation for how they do everything in their business. It has been very successful for them, but now the homosexual rights lobby has decided that Chick-fil-A is going to be the next target of their vitriol, and so they are trying a boycott of Chick-fil-A. Well, this is where many people who stand on those same biblical principles can stand up and be counted by patronizing Chick-fil-A restaurant. Now, we don't get anything for doing this. They're not an underwriter of this program at all, but I've actually personally met Dan Cathy and his family, and they have been investing in good, biblically-based, traditional pro-family values issues for as long as the company's been around. And it would be a shame if the spite of homosexual activists who want everybody to bow the knee to their demands were to hurt this company in such a way that it would end up causing their business to be hurt.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, Chick-fil-A has been heavily involved in helping to fund things to help people strengthen their marriage as well.
Yes.
So they're not just saying traditional marriage and walking away from it. They stand behind it and actually fund helping people maintain a strong, healthy marriage.
Absolutely.
From a biblical perspective. So,
and they have a pretty good chicken sandwich, too.
They have a darn good chicken sandwich. I personally had the chicken nuggets tonight, although I normally have the strips.
And I know that there's an effort underway by a number of groups to target the 1st of August, which is, I believe, is a Wednesday, as Chick-fil-A Day, where many people will go out and support Chick-fil-A by jamming their stores full of people ordering meals. So, yeah, mark it on your calendars if you want to, but I would say I like Chuck's idea better. Just go out and do it a couple, three times a week. You eat out that often.
I agree.
But not exactly the topic we were planning on talking about today, ladies and gentlemen. That's just a lovely little personal segue that we like to get into in this program every once in a while. What we are going to talk about today, Chuck, is what I call the gang that couldn't shoot straight. And I think it has a lot of meaning since we're also talking about issues surrounding the massacre in Aurora, Colorado last week. That many folks, we've talked earlier this week about many in the media and liberal columnists all trying to spin this that it wasn't the fault of this individual who was a shooter, who we've since found out, people wondered how this supposedly unemployed student could afford all these guns and ammo. Well, it was because his entire tuition was paid for, and he had a $26,000 stipend from the National Institutes of Health. Yes, the NIH had funded him a grant in order to be at this prestigious program in Colorado studying neuroscience. So that's where he had his extra spending money, Chuck. It was from us, the taxpayers.
So the National Institute of Health funded this insane person's rampage, because let's face it, the hardware and the chemicals that he bought cost probably around $20,000 in the amount of ammunition that he bought and all the booby traps that he set up in his apartment and all the things that they've discovered that he had. That's very interesting. If you do any study on some of the ideas that he had, they were, to say the least, esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
He believed, there is a YouTube video of him teaching a class at a quote-unquote science camp, and it's as pseudo-scientific as you can get. It was some kind of a creative visualization thing where essentially he was trying to teach people that they could go back and have an illusion, a temporal illusion, I think he called it, where you could go back and actually change the past with your illusion. Now, Barry, there's no science involved in that.
It's of course not.
Mysticism. It's frankly, anybody who believes that this can be done is not firing on all eight cylinders. Well, we already know the guy isn't completely coherent. Nonetheless, apparently, if your ideas are silly enough, you can get an NIH grant.
That seems to be the case. But what I'm talking about, because that was one of the things that popped up here in the media recently, ladies and gentlemen, was many people I had seen through my networks have been asking, well, where does an unemployed college student get all this money? And they started talking about conspiracy theories and how he was funded by, and honestly, he was funded by the government, but it wasn't in the way that these people were thinking with the conspiracy and the black helicopters, that this was actually planted by the government in order to create another avenue for gun control. Well, it's gun control that I want to talk about, Chuck, and I want to talk about our friends on the left, especially our friends who are in office on the left, because that's what I call the gang that couldn't shoot straight, the Democratic caucus, mainly, in this country. Because as we've seen through their mouthpieces in the media and other places, the drumbeat is strong for gun control and we need more laws to protect people from these dangerous guns. When in fact, this man, Mr. Holmes, would have probably used anything he could have used, gotten his hands on, to create mayhem. We talked earlier on this program and on another earlier day about the fact that he could have used any form of a chemical weapon. If he was a neuroscientist, he probably had some access to those type of things as well. But what we have is the beat of the drum is beating stronger. And of course, Frank Lautenberg, who's a senator from New Jersey, has come out flat out, Chuck, and said, let's stop wasting time and start saving lives. He did this on his Twitter account. Congress must prioritize a ban on high-capacity gun magazines, as if the shooter would have been slowed down too much by having to drop a clip and plop another one into his semi-automatic had he had no resistance in this gun-free zone in this movie theater.
Exactly. The whole point is that there was nobody in the theater that was prepared to shoot back, and there was nobody in the theater with the gun to rush the guy. Now, remember, this guy was wearing a gas mask.
Yes, he was.
It means his peripheral vision was extremely limited. And basically, all he could do was see ahead. He couldn't see very well to his sides. Would I have thought of while somebody's cranking off how many rounds into the audience? I don't know, Barry. I can't tell you that I would have. But I can tell you this, that nobody got up and decided to try to make a rush. There are two choices when you're confronted with this kind of situation. You can sit glued into your chair. You know, knowing me, I'd probably be in the center, which means I'd have to get everybody to stand up so I could get out into the aisle, which means I'd get shot. But the fact is that nobody made a concerted effort to go after this guy. And that means that, let me give you, for instance, I own a 45 that has 7 shots. 7's all you get. In order to get more, you got to have magazines. Okay, there's nothing that says you can't carry. I could very easily have carried 10 magazines into that theater. No problem. 7.45 magazines isn't that big. It's kind of heavy because there's a lot of lead there, and that's a big slug. But it could have been done very easily, and nobody would have stopped me from kicking out my first 7-round magazine and putting another in there and another in there and another in there and another in there.
Yeah, but so this, but Senator Lautenberg thinks that if we move the magazine size down to, oh, I don't know, 3 or 5, that somehow will prevent these people from actually committing such horrendous crime. However, I think he's missing the entire point, Charles, and that is the person wanted to commit the crime. His choice of instrument in order to carry out the crime was almost inconsequential.
Yeah, exactly.
He was also using a shotgun, which in most instances can only be chambered with 3 shells.
It depends. I've got a couple that'll take 5.
Yeah, well, at the most. So even that, you're still getting down to a situation where Lautenberg's basically saying that if we limit magazine sizes, people won't die. And honestly, that has to be one of the more asinine comments that I've heard from a supposedly intelligent human being in a while.
Well, look, any argument will do. Any argument will do when you're trying to appeal to emotion rather than logic. And that's what this entire thing is about. The calls on the left for gun control are all about an emotional appeal. They've got, while feelings are running high, they've got to make their appeals now.
And I understand that, Chuck. And I'll give Lautenberg a little bit of credit. At least he's appealing to emotion and not to fear. Because one of his liberal colleagues, the mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, came out yesterday with an appeal to fear. And his comment was that he believes that all police ought to go on strike until America bans guns. Chuck, I don't know how much more crazy you can get when you have the mayor of a major city in this country basically suggesting that the people who are supposedly there to protect and to serve the citizenry should abrogate their responsibilities in order to drive home his personal political philosophy.
Well, what's interesting, I saw on one site talked about Bloomberg's call, no more police until Americans give up their guns.
Yes.
And everybody's saying, yes, please do that. Go, please, police, go on strike and stay out until we get gun control, which hopefully will be never. And we can prove basically that the police are largely redundant. Now, I don't particularly agree with that.
No.
I think the let me make it clear. I think the police have a very important function to perform in keeping order. I'm not an anarchist, but I understand what is being said by those other people as well. And any cop who would go out on strike because the government can't come in and steal my gun doesn't deserve to hold a badge. Probably should be out permanently. If he's that afraid of my gun, there's an old saying, I fear a government that fears my gun. There's a good reason for that. There's no reason to fear my gun if you're operating within the bounds of the limits of government.
That's
if
true.
You're operating outside the bounds of the limits of government, you're supposed to be afraid of my gun. And that's what we're seeing here, Barry. I don't know how to pull a punch on that. I don't think there is any way to pull a punch. The facts are that the bottom line is I fear a government that fears my gun.
Well, and Chuck, I don't think we should have too much fear of this government in one sense, because again, I'm talking about the Senate Democratic Caucus, and we know that the Democrats are in control in the United States Senate, but it's obvious that their caucus isn't talking to one another on this issue especially, because as Frank Lautenberg is out there saying that we need to just basically right now ban high-capacity magazines and do more gun control. At the very same time, Senator Dianne Feinstein from California, his fellow Democrat in the caucus, basically said over the weekend, well, people haven't rallied around gun control, and well, because of this election year, it's a bad time to embrace a new subject. In other words, she's saying, we know that gun control is not a political winner in this country, so we are certainly going to bring it up as the Democratic Party and start screaming for gun control. However, again, I don't think they checked their crib notes with each other, because Lautenberg obviously didn't get the message, and neither did Mike Bloomberg. And it's interesting, Chuck, because what that does is it puts the sitting Democratic President Barack Obama kind of in a tight spot, because he is trying to walk a fine line and saying, well, you know, we need to protect Second Amendment rights, ensuring that those who shouldn't have guns under existing law don't get them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you know full well that Barack Obama and his cohorts, you look at what happened with Eric Holder and Fast and Furious and other things, that trying to eliminate private ownership of guns is a priority, but not one that he's going to bring up in an election year.
Well, okay, let's be clear about what Obama's trying to do. He knows he cannot do a frontal assault on this, so he's trying to play stealth.
Yes, he is.
What he is trying to do, he is going to sign on the 27th of this month, which is what, Friday?
Yes.
Interesting, again on a Friday. He is going to sign a treaty called the United Nations Small Arms Treaty. And as far as he is concerned, that will be, if it is ratified, and let's not put it past him to say just because he signed it, he doesn't really need a ratification. He will start to implement it without the ratification, as has been done so many other times.
Yeah.
What that will do, according to his theory of government, is ban small arms sales, if not ban, severely restrict. This is a UN treaty, and we've talked about it. I think we talked about it two or three times last week.
Right. So you can go online at principledpolicy.com and get our archives if you want to hear more about it.
And this is the way Barack Obama's trying to do it. He's trying to do it by stealth rather than by a frontal assault, because he knows the frontal assault will get him unelected real fast. This way, the media can play the game. They can try to soften the earth through these drumbeats by talking about these tragedies and ignoring, as we spoke about yesterday, ignoring the fact that concealed carry and small arms owners are preventing crimes and preventing big massacres, because the news media refuses to report it. And the reason they refuse to report it is because it would be impossible to get the UN Small Arms Treaty support if it became known that small arms owners are stopping big tragedies from happening. Therefore, they just don't report it.
That's
quote unquote, it's not news.
Isn't that quaint?
Yes, it is.
Yes, isn't that quaint? If you don't report it, it's not news, and therefore nobody knows that gun control doesn't work, but a person who has a legitimate firearm and can carry it legally can prevent numerous tragedies from happening.
Now, that being said, we have to continue tomorrow.
All right.
We are out of time. Please join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.